This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. A lot in the news. Roger Stone tweeting out, or Instagramming, I guess it was, putting out on Instagram yesterday a photo of the judge who is overseeing his case along with a crosshair. And that judge has now required him, ordered him to show up in court today at 2:30 Eastern time. I have a feeling he's going to walk out of there in handcuffs, or he's not going to walk out of there, if you know what I mean. We'll see. But it appears that Roger Stone actually has played a much larger role in all of this stuff than anybody ever realized. So there's that happening. In the previous hour, Bernie Sanders called in. He has announced his candidacy for the president. He's trying to, over the course of the next couple of weeks, sign up 1 million people who are willing to donate just, you know, an hour a month of their time, an hour a week, whatever it may take, you know, make some phone calls, talk to their neighbors, put out signs, whatever. Obviously, there's a bunch of other great candidates out there who are running as well, and they're all looking for support as well. But, you know, today is the day that Bernie announced. And in this hour, we were going to start out with a debate with Dr. Paul Kengor, who has written an article in the American Spectator, Green on the Outside, Red on the Inside. Welcome to American Socialism's new green-red deal. But I guess he wimped out. Sometimes you book these conservatives, and then at the last minute they look at your website and go, oh, wait a minute, you know, this guy's actually going to debate me? You mean? I can't do that. So he wimped out, and he's not here with us. C'est la vie, which is fine, frankly, because given that Bernie just announced, I would like to revisit a little bit of Franklin Roosevelt with you, because he, you know, Bernie, in my opinion, and Elizabeth Warren, absolutely, and several of the other Democratic candidates who are moving in that direction are the political heirs of FDR. FDR is the guy who literally invented the modern day Democratic Party. Right. Before that, I mean, you had Woodrow Wilson. He fought World War I. He was a racist. He played Birth of the Nation in the White House. He was a big fan of eugenics. I mean, just weird stuff and no real core principles that I know of. Anyway, I'm not a Woodrow Wilson fan. He was, you know, but he was a Democratic president before FDR. And then before that, it was Grover Cleveland. You know, and his probably the high point of his presidency was in 1887. In his second State of the Union address, where he said that because of the combinations and monopolies, that the iron heel of American industry is now upon the neck of the average person. I mean, it's a great speech. Look it up. But, I mean, that was about it, right? Prior to that, the Democratic Party had been the party of the South. It had been the party of the plantation owners. It had been the party of slavery. And the Democratic Party went through a really, really radical change, starting with FDR. And then from FDR to today, we also had Lyndon Johnson, who, yeah, the war in Vietnam, I was out there protesting it. Many of us were, hey, LBJ, how many kids have you killed today? But the reality, the parallel reality is that while he made a terrible mistake with that war, one that that tormented him to his death, to the day he died, he also initiated the Great Society, which was a major program that cut poverty almost in half in the United States in less than a decade, and that Ronald Reagan and his heirs ever since have been systematically taking apart. But the big point, I think, of Bernie's running for president is that if you just went back 3, 4, 5 years, right, just a couple of years ago, I mean, you could go back to, you know, the 2008 campaign, you know, President Obama versus Hillary Clinton at the time, the 2012 campaign, the 2016 campaign. In any of those campaigns, no candidate for president, except Bernie Sanders in 2016, was willing to give a full-throated endorsement to Medicare for All, to a $15 minimum wage, to breaking up the big banks, to free tuition at public colleges, to lowering drug prices, to having new labor laws that encourage union participation, to curbing corporate spending on elections. This is a list from Jeff Stein in today's Washington Post on Bernie's agenda. Paid family and medical leave, gender pay equality, Social Security benefits. These are the things that Bernie ran on in 2016, and he's doing it again. He's adding to that this time, obviously, climate change. That's part of the Green New Deal. legalizing marijuana nationwide, ending cash bail nationwide, and heavy taxation of wealthy estates, corporations, and the richest 1% of Americans, and closing the offshore tax havens. Now, you know, the freaks on the right are you know, all about, oh my God, it's socialism, it's communism, what does this mean? And that's the exact same thing they said about FDR. So I want to just play a few FDR clips here and give you a sense of the kind of dialogue, and this is from 1936. This is when he'd already been president for 4 years and he's running for re-election. And he's talking about the forces that he has been fighting for 4 years, bringing us out of the Great Depression. And he starts out by asking the question, what is freedom? What is freedom? You know, the conservatives today would tell you that freedom is not having to pay taxes and not having regulations so that corporations can dump all the poison they want into your water and air. I would submit that FDR had a little better definition. Here he is.
That very word, freedom, in itself.
It's not coming out. This is not the 360. This is my computer. Okay, we're going to start this again.
That very word, freedom, in itself and of necessity suggests freedom from some restraining power. In 1776, we sought freedom from the tyranny of a political autocracy, from the 18th century royalists who held special privileges from the crown.
So back in 1776, we fought for freedom against basically political royalists. And then he goes through this list. He starts talking about how, you know, since then we've had basically this Industrial Revolution and things have really changed. And
since that struggle, man's inventive genius released new forces in our land.
And he goes through a list of them, and I'm going to jump past the list and get right to the point here, if I can, and see how this, here we go.
For out of this modern civilization, economic royalists carved new dynasties. New kingdoms were built upon concentration of control over material things. Through new uses of corporations and banks and securities, new machinery of industry and agriculture, of labor and capital, all undreamed of by the fathers, the whole structure of modern life was impressed into this royal service.
So we started out fighting against the royalty of England, and now this new royalty has arisen, and it arose through the Gilded Age of the late 1800s and then through the Roaring 20s. And income inequality now is worse than it was in 1929. And in 1929, it was worse than it had ever been at any point in history. And that's what FDR is talking about, these economic royalists, the people who you know, the new kings and the new kings of America. He continues along those lines, amplifying this point.
Private enterprise, indeed, became too private. It became privileged enterprise, not free enterprise.
And that's really what we're seeing right now, too. We're seeing the growth of monopoly. We're seeing the growth of these, you know, dynastic empires. When you've got two billionaire brothers putting $800 million into an election, you know you've got something that doesn't resemble a democracy. And this is what FDR was talking about. He continues.
Royalists I have spoken of, the royalists of the economic order, have conceded that political freedom was the business of the government, but they have maintained that economic slavery was nobody's business.
And see, this is this point of what is freedom?
They granted that the government could protect the citizen in his right to vote, but they denied that the government could do anything to protect the citizen in his right to work. and his right to live.
And this was right after, by the way, the Supreme Court struck down minimum wage laws, child labor laws, and some unionization laws in the National Recovery Act, the NRA, the Blue Eagle. They actually struck that down. This is what FDR is talking about. He was fighting in that day against the Clarence Thomases and the Sam Alitos and the Neil Gorsuches and the Brett Kavanaughs of today.
These economic royalists complain that we seek to overthrow the institutions of America.
And they're saying the same thing now, right?
What they really complain of is that we seek to take away their power. Our allegiance to American institutions requires the overthrow of this kind of power.
This is how the Democratic Party talked. Four times this guy was elected president. This is how the Democratic Party looked at these situations. Here he continues.
They seek to hide behind the flag and the Constitution. But in their blindness, they forget what the flag and the Constitution stand for.
And, you know, it's the same thing. I mean, it's this cheap jingoism that you hear on Fox News and right-wing hate radio.
Now, as always, for over a century and a half, the flag, the Constitution, stand against a dictatorship by mob rule and the overprivileged alike. And the flag and the Constitution stand for democracy, not tyranny, for freedom, not subjection.
There you go. Are you free if you're hungry? Are you free if you're homeless? Are you free if you're sick and don't have access to medical care? I don't think so. We need a new discussion in this country about what freedom is.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And by new, I'm talking about just kind of like all of us who are alive right now, because most people who were, you know, politically active during FDR's time when we had that conversation are no longer with us. Welcome back. Kino in Lakeland, Florida. Hey, what's on your mind today? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Hello, remember, this is Kino the Moose Herder from Lakeland, Florida.
Okay.
And Tom, we've got to use your program to, you were talking about the past, or those, we got to talk about the future, the coming political struggle in this United States. There's got to be some Republican senators that join to cooperate with Democrats. We need a name to rally around. Now, I've written letters to the editor in my local paper. I'm suggesting Moose Herders in honor of Teddy Roosevelt. They can choose their own name. But I need Democrats that want to help us Republicans that want to cooperate with Democrats to come up with a rallying name, which I suggest to be Moose Herders, or they can choose. Help me in that if you can. The other thing, I need Democrats to start talking about Nordic capitalism as an example that this country can follow. It's all this hoorah about socialism is getting us off the path. And in the last week or two on some political talk show, somebody was talking about we got to talk about Nordic capitalism.
That's a good point. You know, that's
a good safety net. Their businesses are free to not have to take care of health care, so they can compete in the world. And then they pay taxes that provide a good safety net. So please, Democrats, join in. Push for those Republicans that will cooperate with Democrats to work around Trump. Now, we may need to all work together to get rid of him after Mueller's comes out, but we got to have a name, a rallying point, and may I suggest it be the Moose Herders honor of Teddy Roosevelt. The Bull Moose Party was sort of sexist, say Bull Moose. We got to be more inclusive, so we say Moose Herders. What do you think, Tom?
I think you've given a lot of thought to this, Kino, and I tip my hat to you. The question I have for you, I mean, you're the eternally optimistic Republican, which really amazes me. You said that, you know, Democrats need to work with Republicans who are willing to work for essentially progressive goals. Can you name even one Republican who has been elected at a national level who qualifies?
All right. There's a college professor down here in Lakeland, Florida, Florida Southern, political science. he agrees with me that Mitt Romney has the potential to be that leader, whether he will or not. But with encouragement, Mitt Romney, who was a governor of a liberal state, and it was the tax plan, health care plan they used, he potentially, I was on C-SPAN with Ro Khanna 2 weeks ago on February 6th. I made a national announcement to invite Mitt Romney to be the leader of the Republican senators who will cooperate with Democrats to get us on a better path. I called Romney's office afterwards and I said, look, I'm calling for you to join and be the leader of these Republicans that will get rid of this madness of Donald Trump being the leader, leading us in on the wrong path. So I have invited on national
and
television
yet, Kino,
Khanna, and now on your program for Mitt Romney.
Yeah, but Kino, Mitt Romney has voted several times with Donald Trump on these very contentious issues. I mean, he's rolled over. When he wanted to be Secretary of State, he went down and groveled, you know, at Mar-a-Lago, and Trump made fun of him. I mean, you really think that Romney has any scruples at all?
Well, I think he wants to make a name in history for himself.
Oh, I get that. I think he thinks that God intends for him to be president.
But we can help him by understanding it needs to involve cooperating with Democrats, and let's come up with a rallying name for them.
Okay, well, good luck, Kino. Keep us up to date on how it's going. And if you find even one more Republican, I'm still skeptical about Romney, then I'd love to hear about it. We'll be back. It's 22 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and James in Mineola, Texas. Hey, James, what's up?
Tom, last week I heard y'all talking about the deficit. It's $22 trillion, right?
Yeah.
So if it's $22 trillion and Trump is such an idiot, all this stuff you guys were saying last week, and Bernie Sanders comes on this week talking about all this free stuff, how does all that get paid for?
Well, part of that $22 trillion is the expenses that are associated with Medicare, Medicaid, you know, medical expenses and things like that. If you had Medicare for all, first of all of us will save about $1 trillion a year collectively. Some of that savings is going to accrue to the federal government. So Medicare for all is actually going to lower the national debt, number one. Number two, with regard to education, we know from the GI Bill that for every dollar that we spent educating young men who came back and women who came back from World War II, for every dollar we spent on the GI Bill, we made $7 in additional tax income from out of them, you know, taxes that they paid through the course of their lifetime because they had higher incomes because they had a decent education. So Medicare for all saves money, doesn't cost money. Free college education not only saves money, it's a massive investment in the future of this country. And the Green New Deal is just a reboot, basically, of what FDR did. Instead of, you know, what FDR did was he put people to work, and what Dwight Eisenhower, the Republican, did, put people to work building an interstate highway system, put people to work building the Hoover Dam, put people to work, you know, with the REA and the RTA, the Rural Electrification and Rural Telephony Administrations, bringing, you know, running electricity and telephone lines out into rural areas. All of those things, every single one of those things, produced multiples of income compared to their cost. Every single one of those were investments. The places where we get screwed, James, the places where when we increase our deficit, when we spend government money and it doesn't produce a return, there are two major ones. The first is giving money to billionaires and big corporations. Donald Trump just gave away $1.5 trillion. If you add up the tax cut, Reagan's tax cuts, George W. Bush's tax cuts, and Donald Trump's tax cuts, those three tax cuts, over the period of time since Reagan started, in aggregate, are over $30 trillion. In other words, there would not only be no deficit whatsoever, we would have a massive surplus, which arguably would be a bad thing for the country because people wouldn't be able to buy treasury bonds. But in any case, that's where your debt is. So number one, that's the worst and most wasteful way. And the second is military spending. You spend $1 trillion on the military and you build a bunch of bombs and you go drop them on some country, you're not going to make a penny off that. I mean, the military contractors can take some money to the bank, but basically as a country, we are made poorer by military spending. The Republicans are prioritizing tax cuts and military spending, which make us poorer, and the Democrats are prioritizing these investments, which will make us richer. James, thanks for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
FDR forever. We'll be back with your calls right after this. It's a wonderful day. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I was just singing Fred Rogers' song. It's a wonderful day in the neighborhood. Oh, my. I am optimistic. I am. And not just because Bernie announced that he's running. You know, we've got a bunch of really great candidates here. And what makes me optimistic is that Bernie's original candidacy back a couple of years ago brought FDR's politics, brought the politics of deeply American values, of genuine Christian and Muslim and Buddhist, religious values, this core stuff of we're all in this together, that the purpose of government is to provide for the general welfare, the stuff that at the founding of the Republic, even there lip service was being passionately given to, and in some cases, being lived out, other places, obviously not. But the point is that conversation now is so different than the conversation that I remember between Democrats and Republicans in elections in, say, the 1980s, in the 1990s, in the first decade of the 2000s. And even different from the conversation by and large that was held until Bernie got into the primary, 3 years ago or 4 years ago, however long ago it was. I can feel it. I can feel this country waking up and realizing that Rupert Murdoch and Fox News and Rush Limbaugh and right-wing hate radio, that these guys have been lying to us, that these guys have been creating a false reality, that these guys have been calling compassion weakness, that, I could go on, but, we've got a full board of calls. We'll pick up your calls. Alan in Fairmont, West Virginia. Hey, Alan, what's on your mind? Alan, you are on the air.
Sir, I'm sorry. I got to get my TV on mute now.
Okay.
Hold on.
You don't sound like Alan. Sure, that's line two, if you want to check and find out what's going on there. Frank in Bensalem, Pennsylvania. Hey, Frank, what's on your mind?
How you doing, Tom? Thanks for taking my call. Previous caller, question about how you're going to pay for all the stuff that Bernie's proposing, and you said that average Americans will save over $1 trillion themselves in health care by going Medicare for all, and the deficit would go down. How you didn't come up with a way of showing how that was being paid for, though. You just said it would be paid for.
Well, you've got to reorganize the system. I mean, look at how they do it in Canada. I believe they have a VAT tax there, but basically, everybody kicks in a little bit. The corporations pay a little more taxes. Average working people pay a little more taxes. And you make a monthly payment to the Medicare system in Canada. It depends on your income, but it runs from around $70 a month to around $150, $200 a month, just like with Medicare for all the rest of us. But the fact of the matter is, Frank, that there are these companies, there are these six giant companies that are banks. They bring money in, they disperse money out. They don't provide any health services whatsoever. They don't give a single child a vaccine. They don't do any surgery. These are banks. And for their services, for taking my and your healthcare dollars and then redistributing those to our doctors and our hospitals in exchange for providing us with that service, they skim 20% off the top. Prior to Obamacare, it was 30 to 40% off the top. Obamacare set a statutory limit that the most they could skim off the top was 20% if they're one of the five biggest or 25% if they're one of the smaller ones. So if you take 20% of the $3 to $4 trillion a year that we spend on healthcare in the United States, it's being skimmed off the top by these obscene banksters. People like Stephen Jay Hemsley, who's the CEO of United Healthcare, who has taken over $1 billion in compensation for the decade or so he's been running that company. If you take that out of the system, you've got a savings.
But I understand that, Tom, but even with Medicare, you're talking about like United Healthcare, the Blues, Aetna, and all like that. They will still exist because under our Medicare system, Medicare only picks up a percentage of healthcare costs, and then you have to go to a private agency to get the additional, I think it's 20 or 30%.
Yeah, and the reason for that is because after LBJ got Medicare passed, the Republicans said, hey, wait a minute, somebody's got to be able to make some money on this, so we're going to cut it down so it only pays 80% of benefits. I get that. But a Medicare for All system could easily be 100%. That's how it is in every other developed country in the world, number one. And number two, yes, of course you're going to continue to have health insurance companies. You know, anybody who says that Medicare for All is going to kill the insurance companies is crazy. There's always going to be people who are very, very wealthy who want gold-plated insurance. They want to know if they go into a hospital if they're not going to have to share a room with somebody. They're going to want, you know, helicopter services instead of just a normal ambulance. They're going to want services that will fly them to other countries or from other countries if they get sick. They're going to want, you know, dental coverage that goes beyond just simple dental coverage. They're going to, you know, that goes to things like, you know, implants and cosmetic dentistry. There's all, you know, every country, to the best of my knowledge, you know, Canada had outlawed health insurance companies for a while. They reversed that about 15, 20 years ago. They have an active and healthy health insurance company sector. It's 1/100th the size of ours because it's purely elective. But there, of course, there's still going to be insurance companies, Frank.
Well, yeah, but they are one of the biggest lobbying groups in the United States.
Well, that's Congress the fight we've got. You're absolutely right.
That. So, yeah, but it's pie in the sky to believe that they're going to be eliminated. I would
like the minute that we start saying these guys are too big and too rich for us to take on is the day that we begin to die.
Well, yeah, I understand it, but I'm a labor guy, and the hardest thing at negotiations in every contract I do is health care. Okay?
Yep.
My union is self-funded, and Obamacare has done nothing for us except hurt us because we have to pay the tax and everything like that. The problem is, Medicare for All would be great because my health insurance for my family today costs about $25,000 a year.
Wow.
Now, I got great coverage. I got union coverage, okay?
Right.
But my sister, okay, who has coverage under the Obamacare, has crappy coverage, okay? She has a $5,000 deductible. She pays high deductibles and everything like that. And I agree with you. If you look at the insurance market where they put you into a system and you can only go to see so many doctors and then the system says, okay, the CWA, the operating engineers or whatever says, okay, you have to guarantee us 5,000 participants a year in this.
Right.
Okay. They skim like so much money off those 5,000, whether they ever use it or not. And
yep,
that's how he gets $100 billion a year for United Healthcare and everything like that. I don't see that being eliminated right now under Medicare for All unless it goes to 100% and you eliminate these insurance companies, which are vultures in this economy.
Well, that's what I would like to see.
The only thing is,
I'd like to see a situation where the average American doesn't need to give any money to any insurance company. I'm on Medicare right now, and I have to pay for a Medicare supplement because the Republicans drilled a hole in Medicare, right? So I'm paying for both my Medicare and my Medicare supplement. That's crazy. I think that, you know, it should just be a single thing. But there will still be insurance companies for, you know, really rich people who want to have gold-plated coverage.
Well, and that's not fair. Okay,
but there's always going to be special things for rich people. I mean, you know, I can buy my clothing at the Gap,
but somebody else goes to Gucci. When we get to a point where we don't want to tackle that, okay, then we give up on society.
Yeah.
And the best society in the world is a healthy society. Okay,
yeah.
And you can't argue that fact.
Yep.
Right? And I don't care if I make $10,000 a year or $10 million a year. If I'm sick, my child's sick, you need to get that person healthy again.
Yep.
Okay? Because there's nothing worse than a sick individual.
Well, it's also a national security issue.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's no argument with me there. But I just can't see Medicare for All with having 20%, 10% or whatever. I'm getting near that. I'm 59 years old. I'm getting near that Medicare age.
Yeah.
All right? I've been paying Social Security since I was 12 years old. All right, I can prove it. And I'm entitled to it. I want it. Okay, and I'm going to have to pay $475 when I retire to my union health care to maintain my Medicare Part B. All yeah. right? But it's a ludicrous amount. I mean, it's...
No, I'm with you. Frank, we're starting to talk in circles here, but I'm completely with you. And this is why we all need to engage in this fight. We can't just say, you know, it can't be done. And any politician who doesn't have the courage to say, yes, this is the fight of our lifetime, of our generation, I don't get. Frank, thanks for the call. Helen in Fairmont, West Virginia. Want to try it again, Helen?
Sure.
We just have a minute. Make it a quick one, please.
Okay. I don't think you have to worry about voting for Beelzebub because I think he's already our president.
Yeah, that was Nate's point, yes.
But I'm looking forward to this election, the first one I really look forward to for several years. But I'm glad Bernie's in it. I'm glad Senator Warren is in it. And like you, I think we have a bunch of good candidates. But the Republicans, I can't figure out where the 37% of the country is that supports Donald Trump.
I think, Helen, it's a testimonial to the power of Fox News. I really think that that's probably 75 to 80% of it, and the remainder of it is probably right-wing hate radio, because these people literally live in a completely different universe than the rest of us. Helen, thank you for the call, and spot on. And thanks again for watching the program on Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. It's 45 minutes past the hour. We're going to check in 4 minutes with Talk Media News.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
In just a few minutes, Luke Vargas is going to drop by and tell us what's going on in the world. And welcome back. Tim, watching Free Speech TV in Mesick, Michigan. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Hey, Tom. You know, I heard that guy on C-SPAN on the Washington Journal, you know, the bull party thing.
The moose herders, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what it is. You're getting trolled, brother.
Do you think?
I mean, you know, these people that call in, and I am ecstatic that Bernie's getting back in. Because when I was still working as a union machinist, I wasn't propelled into the middle class. I was catapulted.
Yep.
And because of my union membership and the dues I gladly paid, I was able to retire when my dad died to take care of my 88-year-old mother. And anyway, I am just so, and I donated like $900 to Bernie's campaign when I was still working because I could afford to.
Yeah.
And he represented me. He was like the new FDR on steroids. And I'll tell you what, well, because I had to retire early, but at least I had some kind of pension, which ain't a whole lot, because I had to take it, you know, early. But go Bernie, and don't let these trolls come in. And I just love you. Oh, and by the way, last time I talked to you, I told you about that, you know, Paradise Island, Zug Island.
Mm-hmm.
Google it. I was able to see that from my home in southwest Detroit. And you understand, it wasn't exactly Catalina.
Yeah.
Google it just for your own, because I know you're from Michigan and I'm from southwest Detroit.
Yeah, I'll do it. Tim, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech. Ed in Belfair, Washington. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Hey, good morning, Tom. If I could, I'd like to give a shout-out to Jefferson Smith. He did a great job filling in for you last week.
Amen.
As soon as the primaries were over, I put my Bernie for President sign up right away and changed it from 2016 to 2020.
Mm-hmm.
I am thrilled to death, as I told your call screener, that Bernie's in the race.
Yeah, me too. You know, whether he wins the race or not, he is going to have a huge say in the dialogue that is the race. And I think that that's just vitally important. You know, this time around, I'm not planning on endorsing explicitly anybody, but I am really glad that he is in the race. So
yes, and if I may, I think that the more candidates in the Democratic Party that we have running is better for us, because all those voices will be heard. So, but I'd like to see them basically be all on the same page.
Well, that's not going to happen. I mean, you've got a variety of, you know, regional perspectives, a variety of perspectives on corporate money, on billionaire money in the election. You know, different perspectives on criminal justice. I mean, there are differences in the Democratic Party, and that's actually a good thing. That's a healthy sign. That's the Republican Party has very, very few differences, and that's a sign of how essentially cancerous, you know, is a rotted corpse essentially the Republican Party now. But Ed, spot on. Thanks a lot for the call. Luke Vargas is up next with Talk Media News. Stick around. So let's check in with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. On the line with us is the chief foreign correspondent for Talk Media News, Luke Vargas, joins us from the UN headquarters in New York. You can hear his two-minute newscast every day. Just search Luke Vargas wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, Luke.
Hi, glad to be with you.
Great to have you with us. So we're just 5 days away from this U.S. aid to Venezuela. What's the deal here?
Well, we don't quite know what the U.S. plan is for Saturday, but we can sort of speak in broad terms about what the sort of overarching goal here is to try and use a combination of volunteer.
Luke, you still there?
Tom, sorry about that.
Okay.
Let me say, so we are 5 days away. The plan on the U.S. part is basically to try and with the help of the Colombian authorities, get volunteers, apparently hundreds of thousands of them, 250,000 by one report, have already signed up to do this, to gather in Cucuta at the border of Venezuela and Colombia and just try to walk over this international peace bridge through the checkpoints into Venezuela carrying aid by hand. I mean, it seems outlandish, and clearly these people are going to be turned away.
Is this by way of defying Maduro?
Yes, of course. I mean, the goal here is to either get, you know, actually successfully get through and get into the country, though, again, these are, you know, truck drivers and other volunteers in Colombia who they're not going to be bringing passports with them. They're not going to be are probably signing up to, you know, go into exile in Venezuela, you know, and hide from authorities. I don't think a lot of thought has been put into this. And I think the logic on the American side is, as articulated by Elliot Abrams and people like him, where they're just sort of hoping that this gesture is so overwhelming to the Venezuelan military that they begin to defect on the spot and wave people through. It seems very, you know, very much ignoring the risk here, which is that, you know, if you see individual Venezuelan soldiers defecting, who knows what might happen to those people. For as many soldiers as might defect, you might have some that decide to.
This could kick off a civil war.
People who are crossing over the border. Yes, I mean, I think the possibility of you know, actual violence here can't be ignored. And I am just sort of continually in awe of the fact that as this date gets closer, there is no further clarification on the American part about exactly how this is all going to go down.
Yeah.
And add to it now that you've got these two massive concerts being planned, one by Richard Branson on the Colombian side of the border on Friday. Now the Venezuelan government is apparently going to throw a two-day music festival against imperialism on the far side of the border. It's just going to be a mess of people, journalists, military folks, volunteers. I have no idea what's going to go down, but it's scary that we're sort of leading this.
And I'm very concerned about this. As long as Elliot Abrams has anything to do with this guy is a war criminal, and it's so wrong. Anyhow, Democrats on Capitol Hill, according to these documents that we've recently seen, apparently the Mueller probe, are starting to look into no longer Russian money, but now Saudi money, helping Donald Trump or influencing the White House. What's this all about?
Yeah, we got a 24-page report this morning. I'm surprised this hasn't been covered in more places yet, but all of, you can read the report by prepared by Elijah Cummings' staff here at the House Oversight Committee. In 24 pages, details that multiple whistleblowers have come forward to the Democratic Committee to warn of efforts in the White House to, quote, and I'll just quote two sentences here, to rush the transfer of highly sensitive U.S. nuclear technology to Saudi Arabia in potential violation of the Atomic Energy Act and without review by Congress as required by law, efforts that may be ongoing to this day. It basically says that, the Trump administration, it mentions in sort of a broad sense that the Trump administration's connections with Saudi Arabia continue to be, quote, shrouded in secrecy, raising significant questions about the nature of the relationship, end quote. It appears there is a consortium called IP3 International, which represents the American nuclear industry or various companies within it that are eager to do business in Saudi Arabia. They have been preparing talking points called a Middle East Marshall Plan, which would basically involve them not, you know, rebuilding the Middle East for some grand humanitarian cause, but building dozens of nuclear power plants in countries like Saudi Arabia. And they, you know, who's the biggest proponent of this was Michael Flynn, who had signed up as an official advisor and remained one through the transition into becoming president. And as this report documents, at multiple times, once he was actually in the White House, is lobbying President Trump to, you know, embrace this as a part of American policy. He doesn't disclose these relationships in any of his documents to get security clearances. The report goes on to say basically that these U.S. private commercial interests have been, quote, pressing aggressively for the transfer of this technology. Their commercial, these entities stand to reap billions of dollars in contracts associated with the construction and operation of nuclear facilities in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and have been apparently in close and repeated contact with President Trump and his administration to the present day. And the reason this report is going public, according to Elijah Cummings' office, is that you've seen as recently as last week President Trump hosting delegations from the American nuclear industry at the White House to discuss the sharing of technology to Saudi Arabia. Kushner is going to Saudi Arabia next week, and this report says you've got a proliferation risk, right, that we've been giving away technology that could be used to make a bomb. There's procedural and legal violations for rushing this through, conflicts of interest, which could be illegal. And finally, that you know, members of the administration have been ignoring warnings from the ethics office about conflicts of interest, which itself could be problematic. So something to watch.
Are there any clues here that the Kushner family or the Trump family have been getting Saudi money?
That's not in here, but there's a lot else. Look it up, House Oversight Committee website.
I'll check it out. Luke Vargas. Luke, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Good talking with you. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.